Oyez. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas is now in session pursuant to adjournment.
Thank you. Be seated. This morning, the court has one case on its oral submission docket. That matter is Trinity River Authority versus URS Consultants, Inc., and others from Dallas County. The court has allotted 20 minutes for each side to present oral argument. The petitioner may reserve a portion of that time for rebuttal by advising the marshal of our court. We are recording these arguments for the court's convenience. If you desire to listen to a tape of the argument, you may make application with our clerk. The court is ready to hear argument from petitioner.
May it please the court, Mr. Kenneth Lambert will present arguments to the petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. My name is Ken Lambert. I represent Trinity River Authority in this matter. Briefly, the Trinity River Authority sued URS for the negligent design, for their negligent design, which caused a failure of a basin wall at a sewage treatment plant. However, TRA soon discovered that well before they ever managed to get in the courthouse door, the legislature had already closed the door and locked it before TRA even could have possibly known that they had a cause of action. Effectively, TRA's cause of action was completely abrogated before it ever arose. The statute of repose, which is being challenged here, the statute of repose against architects and engineers, suffers from a number of constitutional infirmities. The most significant, the one that I plan on arguing today, is the open courts infirmities. The open courts provision of the Texas Constitution protects a number of interests, as this court has recognized through a series of cases. But the core of the open courts provision is the right to access to the court. And in this case, that is the interest that is fundamental, because the statute completely abrogates the cause of action. It effectively denies access to the courts by Trinity River Authority and assume people similarly situated. Now, unlike in many states, the Texas open courts provision has been recognized to be a substantive right. It's not a mere procedural 14th Amendment type right that gives you some kind of basic procedural guarantees. It's a substantive right. It's a very important substantive right that protects citizens, and in this case, Trinity River Authority is a citizen, from legislative acts, the acts of the legislature, that prevent access to the court before we could discover that there was a problem. The essential test here is the Sachs versus Butler test. You have to have a common law cause of action, which I don't believe there's any problem with whether we have a common law cause of action, negligent design. Then the restriction placed on that cause of action has to be unreasonable or arbitrary when balanced against the purpose of the statute. It's the second prong that's the most troublesome and the most important prong of this case. The basic analysis of that second prong comes from the LeBone case out of this court, which allows an abrogated cause of action to be upheld, to uphold that, if it provides, one, a reasonable substitute cause of action or of some sort, or if it is a reasonable exercise of police power in the interest of the general welfare, also known as the societal benefits type test. Now, after Sachs, in Sachs, it was a challenge of the medical malpractice statute of repose. There was a series of cases, the Sachs, Nelson versus Cruz, and Eagle versus Nelson cases, that analyzed open court challenges to the medical malpractice statute of repose, which is the only other statute of repose that this court has ever considered a constitutional challenge to. And in Sachs, the court specifically recognized that there was a legitimate purpose for the statute, and yet still struck it down because no substitute was given for the abrogated cause of action from the Sachs. After Sachs, the court expressed kind of some confusion, and it's understandable because the big question was whether the general societal benefits type balancing test still really existed in Texas. Could you uphold a statute solely because there's a benefit to society when it abrogates a well-established common law cause of action. In Lucas v. United States, this court had a specific analysis where they went through dealing with that specific situation and said no. In the absence of an adequate substitute, pure societal benefits is insufficient to uphold a abrogated cause of action and the statute that causes that.
Before we get to the question of a substitute, don't we have to decide whether the restriction is unreasonable?
Yes and no, Your Honor. I believe we went under both aspects of that, but it appears under Lucas that you don't necessarily have to go that extra step. If it's a pure societal benefits balancing test, Lucas appears to be abrogating that and purely focusing on the reasonable substitute, that there is some kind of a reasonable substitute.
So we go from the first prong, whether there's been an abrogation of well-established common law cause of action, and then the next question is, did the legislature provide a substitute? And we leapfrog whether it's reasonable or not.
We don't completely dispense with the reasonableness aspect. I believe that's included within the whole concept. The best example I can think of is the classic, is the workers' compensation circumstance. The legislature clearly abrogated a worker's right to sue his employer for negligence and negligent injuries, but they gave him back something, gave him back a reasonable substitute, some other way to get their remedy. In Lucas, which was not an access case, it was just a cap case. I mean, you could get in the courthouse door, you just couldn't get all the money you were necessarily entitled to. The court came out and focused specifically on that reasonable substitute, that there's some other way for you to get the relief you're entitled to. A number of the courts of appeals in interpreting the Sachs type test and those cases have focused on whether there's somebody else that you sue or can sue. Now, whether that's a viable, reasonable alternative or not, we don't have that in this case. We sued the design engineer for a design defect. That's the only viable defendant. If our cause of action against the only viable defendant is completely abrogated years before we ever knew that there was a loss, then I think this squarely raises the open courts analysis under the cases that have decided in briefs.
Do you contend that the discovery rule in an ordinary statute of limitations case is of constitutional dimension? That is, if the discovery rule does not apply, is that unconstitutional because you've lost your cause of action before you knew about it?
Yes, I believe in a very real sense that is so, Your Honor. It's very analogous to the Nelson versus Cruzan type case, where the court has clearly said in the medical malpractice standpoint that the discovery rule does not apply. It doesn't exist. Yet, if it is impossible for someone to have discovered that their cause of action accrued before they ever knew about it, it accrued, they didn't know if there was a problem, sometime later after the repose period has passed, suddenly their injury manifests itself and the courthouse door is locked. In Nelson versus Cruzan, in that series of cases, the court came out and said, under the open courts provision, you just can't do that. Open courts provision is a strong substantive right. Someone with a common law cause of action just can't be kicked out of court until they have some chance to get in the door. It's clear under Texas law and under most states' law that cause of action accrues when the tort occurs, when the wrongful act occurs. I believe in Marino v. Sterling Drug that was mentioned. The very nature of a statute of repose is to cut off a cause of action before it actually accrues. And in this case, that's precisely what happened.
In your view, then, you couldn't have a statute of repose.
It would be very, very difficult to have a true statute of repose.
Actually, it would be impossible.
In circumstances where the injury was not discoverable, yes, Your Honor, it would be impossible.
There are a number of other statutes that the legislature has passed in recent years. Good Samaritan statutes, abolition of some causes of action about interfering with a marriage, statutes about helping people put out chemical fires, or a lot of environmental-related statutes. If you give assistance to try to clean up the environment. Statutes about serving as directors on a pro bono or a nonprofit type of enterprise, or opening your land up to people for recreation without charging a fee. All of those attempts by the legislature to balance a greater societal need for something with the right of access to the court, simply unconstitutional without further inquiry under Lucas?
Well, Your Honor, the way Lucas is worded, that would appear to be so.
Other state really denies its legislature the right to make such inquiry, do you?
Actually, I believe there are a couple of states, which probably referencing one of the appendices, that have a very strong, reasonable substitute.
I think I overstated. Two or three other states.
Correct, Your Honor. There are very few states that have that strong of a following, similar to the wording in Lucas. A number of states have specifically rejected Lucas and its reasoning. But even in the absence of Lucas, when you do balance these interests, there's a separate argument, the Nelson versus Cruzan type argument, where you have effectively cut off a cause of action before someone could possibly know that they were injured. And that's...
How is that different than just saying, no matter how bad it hurts you, or you aren't going to have a cause of action, even if you discover it the day after the conduct occurred?
Well, it's different in that if you eliminate a cause of action that didn't exist at common law, then technically that's kind of like a gift to someone, I guess you could say. A common law cause of action has been elevated to, a higher standard by the open courts provision and by the cases construing the open courts provision. If I have a negligence lawsuit against someone else, the legislature can't just arbitrarily come in and cut that off and leave me totally out on a limb. Now, if you have the balancing of societal needs, sometimes if there's a very, very high public standard that's necessary, the police power type thing, under the pre-Lucas analysis, some of the cases would say that that's enough. You've got a very high public need. It's an emergency, an important situation. Maybe that's enough to say that, you know, that these people out here are just going to be out of luck. You know, they're going to have to go somewhere else to try to get... a remedy for their wrong. But virtually every case that I have found outside this statute of repose in the courts of appeal, virtually every case, virtually all of them are under the medical malpractice statute of repose, where a cause of action is completely cut off and you did not have a chance to discover that you were hurt several years ago. You didn't know it. There's no way to know it. When you discover it, you get your cause of action back, because the legislature just can't cut that off. You had a cause of action for 2 years.
Well, most the overwhelming majority of states that have considered these statute of proposals have, in fact, upheld them under whatever kind of access to courts provision they have.
Yes, Your Honor.
It's pretty overwhelming.
But virtually every state has an open courts provision which is worded very similarly to the Texas, if not identical.
And the majority of states have some type of limitation on architects and engineers.
Yes, Your Honor. Almost every state.
And mostly those have been upheld through some type of analysis.
Yes, Your Honor.
And so if it were not for Lucas, if we were back in the bomb days, why would this be? Why would this not be the type of societal benefit that would justify allowing the legislature to make this policy choice?
Unlike virtually all of these other courts, there's a very large number of courts that, under an open courts analysis, have upheld their statute of repose. But virtually every one of those cases interprets, in fact, not virtually, every one of those cases, in every one of those cases, those states interpret their open courts provision far different from Texas. Significant, almost all of them interpret their open court provision to be a mere restatement of the 14th Amendment, which is a mere procedural guarantee. It's not a substantive guarantee. It's a far, far lower standard than under the open courts provision. There are states out there that literally have come out and said that their open courts provision is not a limitation on the legislature. The legislature can do what it wants to. The Constitution does not limit their power. There are states out there that have specifically had Nelson versus Cruz and type cases and specifically rejected that type of reasoning. Cases that have come out with Lucas type cases specifically rejected, sometimes by name, the Lucas reasoning, because they interpret their open courts provision very narrowly. Very narrowly. Even though it may be written exactly the same as the Texas open courts provision, it is not the same protection. There's a quote that I like a lot from the Dalgard case out of South Dakota, which I think effectively sums up the Nelson versus Cruz type argument here. It says, how can a plaintiff be prevented from bringing a cause of action due to the passage of time prior to that action accruing? The answer to this query is that it cannot, not without violating basic constitutional guarantees. Essentially, a cause of action just can't expire by the passage of time until it is actually accrued and the time can pass.
So actually a flaw in design could show up hundreds of years later and there could still be a theoretical cause of action.
Yes, Your Honor.
A successor entity left.
Theoretically, if there's a successor entity left and they actually have anybody around, they can try to prove a cause of action, which would be kind of difficult. That, you know, as time passes, it becomes almost impossible for plaintiffs to prove that kind of a case. Yes, Your Honor, it would be very difficult.
What kind of substitute would be adequate?
To tell you the truth, I'm not 100% sure. It would be very difficult. Something along, you know, maybe a compensation plan of some sort, along with ideas of the Workers' Compensation Act, something like that is the only thing I can think of that would be an adequate substitute when you completely abrogate a cause of action.
Any other questions? Thank you, Kim.
Thank you.
The court is ready to hear argument from respondents.
May it please the court, Mr. William Charles Bundren will present argument to respondents.
You may proceed.
May it please the court, I'm Charles Bundren, counsel for the respondent, TRA. This case is extremely important, not only for my client, but for all the design professionals and contractors in the state of Texas. It also has significance beyond the simple statute of repose in question here. As the Chief Justice has raised, there are numerous other legislative statutes and legislative actions that would be called into question if this court were to adopt what TRA asked this court to adopt, which is a sole adequate remedy or adequate substitute test in determining whether or not a legislative statute can pass an open court analysis.
Well, it's not really adopting it. That is the law now, as we've commenced.
I believe, Your Honor, that appears to be the law based upon Lucas. However, in the Marino decision, there is language which indicates that the balancing test may still be the test. Of course, this court, as the Supreme Court of this state, has the right to adopt whatever test the court would choose to adopt.
But we can't adopt one just in one case, in one set of circumstances for one case and in another set of circumstances.
That's correct, Your Honor, because you're applying a article of the Constitution. I believe that the test that should be adopted by this court is the balancing test.
So what you're really calling for is the overruling of Lucas.
I believe in this particular fact situation, Justice Doggett, that Lucas can withstand a affirmance of the lower court's opinion. And let me say why. This particular case before the court is not a statute that prevents a party from bringing a right. It is, in effect, a statute that places an outside limit on the discovery rule.
It requires the party to do the impossible, perhaps.
It would if they do not discover the cause of action before the 10-year statute applies. But
what if it can't be discovered before the 10 years?
Then under the statute of repose, as all statutes of repose are written, they have no cause of action. However, in Lucas, The plaintiff in Lucas did not have a cause of action for the damages that they were seeking in Lucas above the ceiling that the legislature had imposed at the moment of the negligent act. They never had a cause of action. The discovery rule was not in question in Lucas. This court can affirm the Dallas Court of Appeals without doing damage to the Lucas decision because of that reason. TRA had a cause of action. If there was a negligent error and a negligent design, the cause of action existed. TRA should have been discovered.
Without any real mean to say, well, they had a cause of action, but it was impossible to discover they had it. But theoretically, they had one because there was a hidden defect in there that no one knew about and no one could discover until failure occurred, but they had one, and therefore it's different from Lucas.
It is different from Lucas, Your Honor, because the legislature did not say they have no right to bring an action. All the statute of repose is an outside limit on the discovery rule. That's all it is. It is not a statute that says you have no cause of action.
What's the difference between doing that and saying you have a cause of action to do the impossible?
That is the statute of repose. There has to be an outside limit upon which a party has to bring a cause of action. That is what the whole purpose of the statute is. I don't dispute that.
What's the great societal benefit we get from that?
We get a great benefit, Your Honor, in that in this particular case, the contract was signed in 1972. The product, the building was put into place in 1976. My client first got notice of suit in 1992.
Where's the societal benefit?
The societal benefit, Your Honor, is that we must bring causes of actions and lawsuits to an end. So this court said in Marino that one
will beginning. You bring it to an end, yes, but it had no beginning. There was no discovery. There was no notice. There was no way for them to know they had a lawsuit, so they had no beginning. There's nothing to bring to an end until it's begun.
Again, Your Honor, you're correct in your analysis because it is a statute of repose and not a statute of limitations. Repose is a statute that cuts off the discovery rule. It is not a statute that cuts off a person's cause of action. So therefore, by the nature and construction of the statute.
Where is the society benefit in allowing defective workmanship to impact perhaps on society generally? A few thousand gallons of sewage certainly has a societal impact. Where is the benefit in protecting the person who designed, created, constructed, installed a defective product? Where is the societal benefit in protecting that person from any liability?
It is a balancing benefit, Your Honor, and as the court has said previously, the court must balance the harm to TRA versus the harm to URS. In this case, witnesses are gone. Witnesses have deceased, documents are gone, the ability of URS to defend a case that is brought 20 years after the contract was signed and 14 years after the failure is impacted. We do not have the ability to defend this case because the company is not in existence any longer, the documents are gone, and many of the witnesses are deceased. Memories have faded. So there is a societal benefit for the general society if you use the general welfare test in bringing litigation to a conclusion and having some outside limit, as Justice Heck indicated, to when a cause of action must be brought. I agree with the court that this cuts off their right because they haven't discovered it. I don't disagree with the justices on that, but the purpose of the repose statute is to modify the court-imposed discovery rule. And the discovery rule is not a constitutional right.
It's not one that society generally can take advantage of, though, is it?
All parties have a right to take advantage of it. The defendant has a right to take advantage of it.
It's not one that society generally can take advantage of. The statute of repose as a defense is not available to society generally. It's only available to people who design and build things.
That's correct as to that particular statute, Your Honor. As to architects and engineers and contractors, as to the statute that's in question here.
Everybody's cause of action.
That's correct.
It cuts off the family of the person who was killed when 10,000 gallons of sewage fell on him when he was walking by that retaining wall. It cuts, if that occurred, it cuts off society generally.
Not just the
Trinity River Authority.
It is an outside limit on the discovery rule, and for that reason, it doesn't violate this court's opinion in Lucas. The discovery rule is not a constitutional right. It is not part of the common law. The discovery rule was a judicially imposed rule, not part of what the common law was.
So there's no reason that these statutes of repose need to be limited to architects and engineers. We could apply them to doctors, to lawyers, to any number of providers.
The legislature could apply, Your Honor, if they chose to, for instance, to a product defect case.
And it would be constitutional.
It would be constitutional if they applied it using a balancing test that weighs the benefits for the conclusion of lawsuits versus the harm that is going to be imposed if the lawsuit is cut off. It is a balancing test.
Providers of health care services.
It could be at some point used, the legislature could, if they chose to, adopt a statute that would cut off the rights. As the Chief Justice indicated, we have statutes that the legislature has adopted across the street that will cut off a person's rights under immunity statutes.
But you're saying the only thing wrong with Sachs was the limitation period was too short.
I believe that the court balanced the interest in Sachs, and on the balancing of that interest said that it's too short because it's a minor plaintiff that you're dealing with. And that's what the court did. The test that was applied in Sachs was a balancing test, but the court said the legislature cut it too short. If the legislature had made it a longer period of time, this court may have found different in its decision. I would like to point out to the court that the legislature has abrogated the common law defense of contributory negligence by our statute on comparative negligence. Can that defense then be challenged? Can the legislature's actions in taking away that defense to defendants be challenged under an open courts analysis? It certainly can if this court adopts the approach that TRA is asking it to adopt.
It can be challenged, but it might well be found inadequate substitute.
Is there an adequate, the question would be, Your Honor, whether or not there is an adequate substitute. The common law gave a defendant a right of absolute bar if there was a negligent act by the plaintiff. The legislature, in its wisdom in balancing the harm that was being done to our society, said that's not fair. So they adopted the comparative negligence statute. Defendants, if this court rules the way TRA would like for it to rule, can now come to this court under the same analysis and ask this court to go back to the days of contributory negligence as a total bar.
Here there's no substitute.
There would be no substitute under the contributory negligence bar either, Your Honor.
Comparative negligence is not a substitute for contributory.
Not to an absolute bar. One act of negligence. Privity of contract is another judicially made requirement that is no longer required for persons to bring causes of action. There are many, many things that existed in
the legislature largely did not do that.
No, the legislature did not, Your Honor. That was court imposed.
Has open courts ever been applied by a court against a court decision?
I haven't found a decision in Texas where the court has done that, Your Honor. It's always been applied against the legislature. I have not found one anywhere else.
And have you found, for that matter, an access to court's opinion anywhere that looks at a defense as opposed to a cause of action, meaning a cause brought by somebody claiming some relief in chief?
I don't think the defendants have gotten that smart yet, Your Honor. I haven't found a case like that yet. Justice Gonzalez suggested that in one of his dissents, I believe in the Lucas opinion, that was a possibility, and it certainly is for a defendant to bring a cause of action. Your Honor pointed out the immunity statutes that the legislature has adopted. Those would all be subject to criticism under open courts.
They won't survive your analysis of why this case is different from Lucas.
If there's a balancing under the immunity statutes, if there's a balancing between the public interest and the benefit to the public to have charitable trustees serve in certain positions and to encourage them to do so by giving them immunity, then under the balancing approach, it would survive.
Right, but you were saying Lucas, this case was distinguishable from Lucas because it merely is putting an ending time on the discovery rule. Under that analysis, all those other statutes are still constitutionally effective.
On the facts of this case, Lucas is distinguishable because the cause of action was not abrogated by the legislature. This particular statute, on the facts of this case, does nothing more than set an outside limit on the discovery rule. And it does nothing more.
Counsel, if the parties to this case, the Trinity River Authority, had required your client to post a bond or some other form of security against any future losses that might accrue outside of the statute of repose, is that a
I mean, is that sort of a mechanism available to parties to function in light of the statute of repose?
Absolutely. And the reason that wasn't done in this case, wasn't contemplated in this case, was that in 1972, when this contract was signed, the predecessor to the current statute was on the books in the state of Texas, and it set an outside 10-year limit upon which a cause of action could be brought against my client. Parties certainly have a right, within the facts of this case, parties certainly have a right to do, as you suggest, to set a bond. They have a right to agree that liability will extend beyond the 10-year period of time by contractual right. And if that statute had not been part of the books, it is quite likely that my client, although I did not represent them at that time because I'm a much younger man than 1972, it's quite likely that the parties could sit down in a contract and could negotiate a longer period of time for a warranty. In essence, what that would be is a warranty or some kind of bond or maintenance bond. And that could be done under the facts of this case. However, at the time that this case, the contract in this case was signed, there was the 10-year statute. That was part of the negotiation. That was part of what our clients negotiated for. Now TRA is trying to take away that right and to hold us liable forever. If there is no limit, then all design professionals in the state of Texas, all contractors in the state of Texas, will have unlimited liability forever, no matter what, because of the discovery rule that applies to causes of action and the discovery of the causes of action. I believe, in essence, that the balancing that should be done, and first I believe that the court should adopt the balancing test, not the adequate substitute test. The adequate substitute test is part of balancing. It is part of what the court should look at in determining whether or not the balancing and the reasonableness of the legislature's actions. Certainly, if the legislature has provided an adequate substitute, then it's reasonable. It's not arbitrary. But the absence of an adequate substitute does not necessarily mean that the legislature's actions should be overturned by this court under the open court's analysis. The court must also look at what the evils are that the legislature was trying to prevent in the adoption of the statute. And clearly here, the primary evil to avoid was to give an outside limit to the potential liability of a design professional. The legislature adopted a 10-year period. Your Honor, if it was a 2-year period, that probably wouldn't be reasonable, because we have a 4-year period on stone contracts. A 10-year period is reasonable. It has been found, and I believe that there are citations to some of the prior cases, that most claims for design defects are brought within the first 4 to 5 years. The cases that have looked at this and have been cited in the courts of appeals are full of legislative history in which the legislature debated the statute of repose and determined that very few of the claims are brought after that initial period of time. If the error is not discovered within 10 years, in this case, if the wet wall of the equalizer basin did not collapse within 10 years, then the legislature has, in its wisdom, on the basis of the public policy of our state, said that is a sufficient period of time for the defect to be discovered if there was a defect.
If there aren't many claims after 4 or 5 years, what's the societal harm? Or what's the benefit in passing that statute to cut off a handful of claims?
To bring conclusion to litigation and to bring conclusion to risk and liability to design professionals and contractors in our state, to have some outside limit whereby they know that at that point, they will not, no further have any potential liability, discovered or not discovered. It gives them the opportunity, for instance, to document retention has become a very major problem in this industry. It gives them the opportunity to dispose of the documents, to dispose of the files, to not have to continue to monitor things.
Why couldn't engineers and contractors like doctors and lawyers buy some kind of liability coverage or take out some kind of bond? Most of their work is bonded at the time. Legitimate contractors, legitimate engineers. What's the societal benefit to give them an advantage that no other potential tortfeasor in society has? be insured against or bonded against?
The benefit, Your Honor, and the reason for the public policy and the reason for the balancing is to bring claims and to bring litigation and to bring risk of claims, the liability that's potentially there, to a conclusion.
Why is that important for this particular class of people when it's not important for physicians and attorneys?
I apologize, Your Honor. I didn't prepare for the last parts of the points of error of this special class. I didn't think the court had granted the writ of error on that point. I believe that deals with, your question goes to that particular point dealing with the special class.
No cases before us, counsel.
I understand, Your Honor. For the reasons that we stated in our brief, and I did not, because the court had not granted it on that writ, did not argue that. For the reasons stated in the brief, the fact that the architects and engineers do have a statute of repose, whereas other professionals do not, such as doctors and such as lawyers, does not violate the Constitution.
Well, there are statutes of limitations that apply to all types of causes of action. Isn't the legislative policy exactly the same, that in part at least, that underlies the statute of repose that supports statutes of limitation? That is to bring claims when you have witnesses that can testify and you've got the documentation and that sort of thing. How is it different from a limitations policy?
From a public policy standpoint, it is not different.
Wait a minute. Statutes of limitations are subject to the discovery rule in every other case but this.
They are, Your Honor. And this is a statute of repose case, which is really a modification of the discovery rule.
An abrogation of the discovery rule.
And after 10 years, it does abrogate the discovery rule that the judiciary has imposed upon causes of action. That is correct. But I believe the public policy in terms of bringing litigation to an end is present in both of the situations, the statute of limitations and the statute of repose. More importantly, in the statute of repose, there's another policy, and that is to place an outside limit upon the potential liability of the design professional. It brings liability to the end. That does not mean that the legislature could not, if it chose to, in the area of other professions, impose some kind of a statute of repose should they choose to do so. But they haven't chose to do so. And for the reasons that we stated in our brief, the fact that they have done it for the design professionals does not mean that on an equal protection claim or a special classification claim, which was argued by TRA in the latter parts of their points of error, that does not mean that it fails because one class of professionals is given the opportunity and the other is not.
Still don't understand why they couldn't insure against this kind of liability and be adequately protected. Why does the legislature have to make a special exception for this particular class of people?
I think that most insurance policies would cover claims made. Most policies today are claims made policies. It is a problem of trying to try a case from a defense standpoint and of trying to bring witnesses in who have died, whose memories have faded, or records that are no longer available.
We have the same problem in other types of courts.
I agree that we do, Your Honor. And I'm not suggesting that the legislature should or should not, in their wisdom, put statute of repose in to take care of discovery rules on other type of professionals. They haven't chosen to do that. That's a public policy decision. In this particular case, the public policy...
Are you still answering Justice Kinnaman's question?
No, Your Honor. I hope that I answered them adequately.
Are there any other questions? Thank you.
For these reasons, we would ask for affirmance.
Your Honors, URS would emphasize over and over again the fact that the lapse of time is so devastating on their case. It's been recognized in courts across the land that the effect of time impacts the plaintiff far more than the defendant because the burden of proof is on the plaintiff.
Why couldn't you contract around this statute of repose?
You probably could, Your Honor. I mean, it's been well established that you can get around most statutes if you draft your contract very carefully.
And assuming the parties who enter into a contract to build a structure rely upon the laws that exist, at least at the time they enter into a contract, why couldn't they just make provision to protect themselves
against the sort of problems that you've identified under these facts?
I shudder to think that any contract professional would be willing to enter into a contract which goes around a statute of repose like this.
Well, what I mean by that is either to require some financial security against the eventual destruction of the structure or damage.
Once again, you run into the problem of extended periods of time for putting up a bond or some type of thing. We're talking events that sometimes happen, you know, 10, 12, 15 years down the line. Once again, of course, it's the plaintiff's burden to prove that it was undiscoverable. So, I mean, if it's not undiscoverable, then the statute of repose, of course, would apply. But these, long down the line like that, we're talking about putting out a bond or something for a number of years. How long does the bond have to go? You run into that same slippery slope argument that, well, does it have to be an eternal bond?
Well, for the same reasons as Justice Gamage mentioned, you ought to be able to buy liability insurance that would, URS might be able to buy claims-made liability insurance that would take into account these remote risks. Is there any reason why other forms of financial security wouldn't be feasible?
Well, insurance as well. I mean, all over the state, people take out insurance to protect themselves from claims that may have happened long ago with the discovery rule and that type of situation. I don't know if there's other things that are legitimately available outside the insurance context. To tell you the truth, I really don't know. It's an interesting thought.
Is there any possible constitutional distinction between a claimant such as you who did deal with the contractor or the architect or engineer initially and a stranger to the transaction that is a person injured in a personal injury?
There probably shouldn't be in this type of context. Originally, these type of statutes of repose originally came about because of some of the changes in the common law over the years. And, of course, the architects and engineers and contractors got these statutes passed to protect them. And I guess the rest of us haven't gotten the legislature to do the same for us yet. But it's interesting. There's at least one law review article that's very critical of these type of statutes that I think expresses it all just in the name of it. With limitation of action statutes for architects and builders, blueprints for non-action. Essentially what these statutes do is they don't require architects and engineers to worry about things that are going to happen 10 years down the line. It puts the effective life that they have to build their buildings for at 10 years. Because if their building collapses 12 years later, causes a major catastrophe in the middle of Austin, they're immunized. The owner of the building isn't immunized. You know, maybe he did something wrong, maybe he didn't do something wrong. He's going to have to try his case and show that it was solely due to somebody else's fault, that he didn't do anything wrong.
Mr. Lambert, that raises a question that I had. Could a state make a determination that these buildings should survive at least 10 years? Whatever the design architect does should last at least 10 years. And if it lasts 10 years, we're going to say that there's no liability if there's a design defect that ultimately appears later. Could a state do that?
Well, many states have done that, obviously.
Isn't that, in effect, what Texas has done?
That's precisely what the statute of repose is doing.
If it was my view that it was public, it was in the public benefit, it actually brings to mind, I shot an arrow into the air, it fell to earth, I know not where. If I thought it was in the public's benefit for people to shoot a bunch of arrows in the air, recognizing that it posed a risk to people on the ground, but I considered it a benefit to do this, would it not meet the balancing test to say if the arrows didn't strike anybody for 10 years, that's the balancing test. Anybody who gets struck within 10 years can sue for the person who shot the arrow, but anybody who gets struck after 10 years can't. So the people shooting the arrows can measure their risk and the people who are accepting the benefit of it can measure their risk. Isn't that really what's happened here? We like the people to build buildings. We recognize that things will happen that we're not aware of, but just 10 years is just the date. The legislature arbitrarily picks as the date we're going to say. Outside that period of time, there's no liability.
I don't think that's really the case, Your Honor. Part of the problem is, you know, if you shoot arrows in the air and then 10 years later one comes down and hits someone, in your example, the person never had any kind of cause of action that could ever possibly arisen until he was struck. He didn't even have a potential cause of action until something actually happened, some operative negligence happened to affect him. In our case, in the TRA case, the operative negligence happened against TRA right there. There's a defective basin that was built. It just didn't manifest itself until later. And these statutes are proposed. That's the main problem with them, is that these causes of action are accruing long ago, clear negligence perhaps, and then here down the line, it just cuts it off.
Then that cut against your argument, Mr. Bunnern says, well, that's really what this is, just a cut off of discovery. You're acknowledging that the tort actually occurred back in 76, but you didn't discover it until 1990 or whenever. Doesn't that cut against your argument that the open course provision makes this unconstitutional because it abrogates the common law? Ms. Bunnern says, well, the discovery rules court made law that extends the statute of limitations, and he's saying, so you don't even reach the constitutional issue here.
Well, Your Honor, of course the discovery rule is court mandated. It's through the common law, and its underpinnings are precisely the same as in this case. It's the open course provision. You're denying someone the right to come into court when there have been operative negligence, but they cannot possibly discover it. And if we can come into court and prove that we could not possibly have discovered it until after the repose period has passed, then we should be given the chance to assert that claim.
Is the discovery rule old enough to be considered well established under open court tests that we've articulated?
I don't know, Your Honor. I don't know that the discovery rules, the discovery rule is something that's being abrogated necessarily by the legislature
frankly, that's not the way I thought of this case until you said it a few times. So,
I didn't either.
Well, the legislature has abrogated the discovery rule in the medical healthcare liability context, haven't they? Where there's no discovery rule anymore since 1977. You've got 2 years from the date treatment ends or the breach occurs, breach of duty occurs. So if you're right and this statute proposes unconstitutional because it cuts off the discovery rule, which is of constitutional dimension, then Article 4590I, the statute of limitations there is unconstitutional too. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe in Morrison versus Chan, this court came out and essentially held that there's no discovery rule there. The legislature says that we're not going to have a discovery rule. The only thing that's still, the only wedge in 4590I is the open courts discovery type context, which if you absolutely could not have discovered it, you just can't cut off somebody's cause of action before it accrues. And that's a number of cases that have said that down the line.
Any other questions? Thank you, Judge.
Thank you.
That concludes the arguments in this cause and concludes the court's oral submission docket for today. This cause is submitted on briefs and oral arguments, and the marshal will now please adjourn the court.
The audience will please rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas now stands adjourned, subject to call.